This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Corey Richens had a best friend. Had is the operative word there. That best friend trusted Corey enough to hand over $45,000 for a home. A rent-to-own deal on a house in Heber City that Corey's real estate company owned. According to prosecutors, the friend moved her family in, started paying rent, believed she was working towards owning that house. Every dollar went into K. Richens Realty's accounts, not towards the friend's equity, towards Corey's debts. The property already carried $456,000 in loans that Corey was defaulting on. A lender foreclosed. The friend's family was evicted from the home. Corey had promised them $45,000 gone. No house, no refund, no equity, no warning. That was January 2022, 2 months before Eric Richens was found dead in his bed with roughly five times a lethal dose of fentanyl in his blood. The murder case is over. Corey Richens was convicted on every count. Aggravated murder, attempted aggravated murder, insurance fraud, forgery, life without parole. The jury needed 3 hours. Judge Marzik called her too dangerous to ever be free. Her motion for a new trial denied. She's sitting in a cell with nowhere left to go on the murder. But there's a second case, a separate filing in Summit County, 26 felony charges that haven't gone to trial yet. Corey's going back to court. The magic continues. And what those charges describe isn't a woman who snapped or a woman who got desperate or a woman who made one catastrophic decision in a financial crisis. What those charges describe is a pattern. Years of forged documents, years of stolen money, years of bad checks, years of lies aimed at everyone around her, not just Eric, everyone. There's a clause in the prenuptial agreement Eric and Corey signed in 2013. It's one sentence, and it looks ordinary until you realize what it made possible. That prenup said Corey had no claim to Eric's business or his major assets if they divorced. No ownership interest, no cut of the masonry company he'd built with his partner, nothing. Unless Eric died while they were still married. That was the one exception. If he died before her, while they were legally husband and wife, those interests transferred to Corey. That's a lever that would have to be pulled for that to happen. You don't pull a lever that involves someone dying. Those levers just kind of happen if there's nothing illegal going on. Keep that clause in your head. We're going to be needing it here in just a few minutes. Eric Richens and his partner ran a C&E stone masonry in Summit County, Utah. Successful business. Eric was worth approximately $5 million. He and Corey met in 2009 while she was working as a cashier at Home Depot. They had a child in 2012, married the following year. And according to prosecutors, by 2019, Corey had started taking money from Eric's accounts and misappropriating distributions from his business. But the move that launched everything, the one that built the entire house of cards, was the power of attorney. In early 2019, according to the charging documents, Corey used the power of attorney to take out a $250,000 home equity line of credit on Eric's premarital home, his house, the one he owned before they got married. She did it without his knowledge. She drew down the entire $250,000 and used it to form K. Richens Realty, a house flipping business. She saw herself as being somebody that was on HGTV. The empire she'd later parade around is proof that she was a self-made real estate entrepreneur, was bankrolled with $250,000 stolen from a man who didn't know his own house was collateral. You must be so proud, Corey. Her family told 48 Hours that Eric was always aware of the family's finances, that she didn't steal from him. But Eric's own estate planning lawyer, Crystal Bowman Carter, filed a statement with the court. In it, Bowman Carter said Eric's primary goal was to protect himself from, and this is a language in the filing, discovered an ongoing unauthorized use and misappropriation of his finances by his wife. Those two versions of reality can't both be true. Either Eric knew about everything and was fine with it or not saying anything, or he went to a lawyer because he was afraid of what Corey was doing to him financially. The court filings say he went to the lawyer. That's the version with documents behind it. What it leads me to believe, this is 1,000% my conjecture, and I know you all like my conjecture on this case. I think he was weighing it. He was planning an exit strategy. He was letting her bury herself in her own crimes so that eventually he could go back and say, look, she's stealing from me. She's doing this. She's doing that, which would be a lot of ammunition, which he would have needed had he not died, to show the kind of human being that she was to a court. You need more than this, obviously, if you're talking about custody of children and such. But if you can show patterns of behavior, patterns of misdeeds, patterns of lies, patterns of theft, patterns of all different things. He was biding his time. He lost. But I do wonder if there was an element of him that saw this going on, and it seems like he did, and said, it's not worth it. It's not worth arguing with her. She's going to lie about it. She's going to come up with excuses as to why she's entitled to it because we're married and you're not giving me the finances I deserve because I simply exist, even though this was all yours before you met me, but now I'm somehow entitled to it because I exist. I mean, there's all sorts of shit that I'm sure to this day in her broken brain in prison, she still, I'm sure, is telling herself, well, this is how it's supposed to be. I'm entitled to it because of this, because of that, even though you're not. Even though the law says you're not, even though the courts have decided that you're not, even though everything says that you're not, just because your brain says you are doesn't mean it is. And that's the problem with borderlines and narcissists and all that shit. Because their brain says it is, it must be true. And there's no room for anybody else's thoughts or laws or rules. Their brain says it is, must be. They're lovely folks to deal with. Eric discovered the secret line of credit in October of 2020, according to prosecutors, the secret origination and continued existence of the HELOC was a source of tension between them. Corey told him she'd repay it. She led him to believe she had it. At the time of his death, the balance was still outstanding. She hadn't paid back a dollar, and what Eric did next is something Corey didn't find out about until it was far too late. He went to the estate planning attorney. We'll get to what he built with that lawyer, but I promise you it's the single detail that makes everything Corey did afterward look even more reckless than it already was, because by 2021, K. Richens Realty was devouring itself. According to the charging documents filed by the Summit County Attorney's Office in the 5 months before Eric's death, the business brought in $170,000 in revenue, and that sounds reasonable until you see the other number, debt. Monthly debt service exceeded $250,000. The business was spending more every single month than it earned in five. She was borrowing for more than 25 lenders just to keep the doors open. In November of 21, according to prosecutors, she took on another $1.1 million in high-interest debt to buy three more properties. She was already in default on existing loans, already delinquent on several others, and she went out and bought three more houses with money she didn't possibly have the ability to service. The charging documents use a phrase here that prosecutors don't throw around casually. By the end of 21, Corey Richens stood on the principle of total financial collapse. The forgery charges, five counts, allegedly cover this period. Prosecutors say she used altered bank documents from Eric's business for mortgage loan applications. She was making it look like she had assets that didn't exist, revenue she hadn't earned. Backing that was never real. The bad check charges, seven counts, were her writing checks between accounts to make balances look solvent when they weren't. The money laundering charges, 7 counts, cover the cycling of funds between accounts to conceal where the money came from and what it was being used for. She wasn't a businesswoman. She was allegedly running a debt spiral with real estate as a set dressing. Borrow from one lender to pay another, forge Eric's documents to borrow from a third, write yourself a bad check to make the accounts look clean, then do it all again next month. The only thing growing was the hole, and the only person who didn't seem to notice or more likely didn't care was Corey. So let's back up to the friend, because this is where you stop being able to argue that Corey was just in over her head. January 22, the business is drowning. Corey owns a property in Heber City through K. Richens Realty. She already owes $456,000 in loans on that house. According to prosecutors, she signs a rent-to-own agreement with her best friend. Move in, pay rent. That rent goes towards a down payment. The friend sends $45,000 to K. Richens Realty. According to the charging documents, Corey takes every dollar and uses it to cover her company's debts. Not a single cent goes towards the friend's equity in the house. A lender forecloses. The friend and her family are evicted. The communications fraud charge in the 26-count filing is built on that specific act, not the forged mortgages, not the bad checks, the friend, her closest friend. You can make a lot of arguments about financial desperation. You can say someone panicked. You can say the walls were closing in and that made terrible decisions happen while she was trying to survive. Sure, but what kind of person takes $45,000 from the person who trusts her the most? What kind of person puts that friend's family in a house she knows is already underwater on $456,000 in loans? What kind of person pockets the money and waits for the foreclosure? That's not panic. That's arithmetic. That's treating your friend, your best friend, like an AMT with an ATM with a face. People weren't people to Corey Richens. They were line items. They had a dollar value and an expiration date. And here's where it all collides. Remember what Eric did after he found out about the HELOC? In November of 2020, Eric met with estate planning lawyer Crystal Bowman Carter. He told her he had two goals. The first was to protect himself from what Corey was doing to his money. The second was to make sure his three sons would be taken care of no matter what happened. He created the Eric Richens Living Trust. He named his sister, Katie Richens Benson, as a trustee. He transferred his partnership interest to C&E Stone Masonry into the trust. He changed the beneficiary on his $500,000 life insurance policy from Corey to the trust. Katie would control everything if he died, not Corey. He didn't file for divorce. He didn't blow up the marriage. He built a wall between Corey and everything he owned, and he never told her he'd done it. Remember the prenup clause? The one that said Corey gets the business interests if Eric dies while married. Eric moved those interests into a trust she couldn't touch. The one exception in the prenup, the one scenario where his death would be financially profitable for her, had been quietly neutralized. She allegedly killed him for a door he'd already closed. She just didn't know it was locked. So the lesson here is, if you change those items, tell your potential murderer before they murder you. They won't have the motive then. It's that simple. Now, I mean, it does make you wonder, though. What would have happened? Prosecutors allege Corey didn't learn about the trust until after Eric was dead. And 3 weeks after his death, she sued his estate. She went after Katie. She hired lawyers and fought for assets that Eric had specifically, deliberately, and legally placed beyond her reach because he didn't trust her with a single dollar. It's not me saying it. That's what he told his lawyer. On the day Eric died, K. Richens Realty owed hard money lenders at least $1.8 million. The day after his death, the number jumped to nearly $5 million. Prosecutors allege she had taken out at least three life insurance policies totaling $1.3 million, naming herself as a beneficiary, a fourth policy worth $500,000 and a fifth worth $168,000 had been redirected by Eric through the trust. She also allegedly changed the beneficiary on a $2 million policy to herself without authorization. That happened in January 22. The same month, she took her friend's $45,000. The same month, the business was collapsing. She had a negative bank balance when Eric died. He was worth $5 million, and she thought she was going to collect all of it. 26 charges, 5 counts of second-degree felony mortgage fraud, 7 counts of second-degree felony money laundering, 1 count of second-degree felony communications fraud, 1 count of engaging in a pattern of unlawful activity, also a second-degree felony, 5 counts of third-degree felony forgery, 7 counts of third-degree felony in issuing a bad check, filed June 27th to 25, 2 days before the statute of limitations was set to expire on several of the charges. Her defense attorney called the timing troubling. Their argument was that the fraud charges only mattered if the state couldn't get a murder conviction. Their words, these charges would not even come into play unless they failed to secure a conviction. That was their public position in 25. 9 months later, a jury convicted her on every count of the murder in 3 hours. The state's murder charges weren't weak. They were devastating. That argument is sitting right next to whatever credibility the defense had left. The pattern of unlawful activity charges ties the entire timeline together. Prosecutors allege the fraud, the forgery, the insurance manipulation, the attempted murder, and the murder itself were all part of one continuous pattern of criminal conduct aimed at financial gain. Not separate bad decisions, not unrelated mistakes made under pressure. One pattern, one motive, one person who treated every relationship she had as a transaction and every person she knew as a resource to be consumed. No trial date has been set yet on the fraud case. Prosecutors are seeking $1.3 million in restitution from the life insurance she collected following Eric's death. Summit County has asked for $1.4 million in prosecution costs. She's already serving life without parole. These charges aren't about adding prison time. She's never getting out. They're about the record, about documenting charge by charge exactly what and who Corey Richens is and what she was doing to every person around her in the years before she decided the only way to save herself was to make sure her husband didn't wake up. The murder was the last move on the board. But these 26 charges show you the person who'd been playing it for years. She stole $250,000 in seed money from her husband's house. She forged his documents to get loans he never agreed to. She borrowed from more than 25 lenders and defrauded on most of them, or defaulted on most of them and defrauded. She cycled money between accounts to keep the records looking livable. She took her best friend's $45,000 and let that friend's family lose their home. And when the entire machine was about to collapse, prosecutors alleged she chose the one option the prenup said would give her everything, except Eric had already closed that door, and she didn't know it. She thought she was the smartest person in every room she walked into. She still thinks that in her cell, in her cage. She thought she could forge a document and no one would check. She thought she could write bad checks and shuffle money between accounts and the math would never catch up. She thought she could take her best friend's savings and the friendship would survive it. She thought she could collect on insurance policies. Eric had already moved out of her reach. She was wrong about every single one, and she's sitting in a cell with a life sentence to prove it. The murderer has a sentence attached. Life, no parole. The friend doesn't have a sentence. She has a foreclosure on her record, and $45,000 she'll never get back. Money she gave to a woman she trusted because that woman was her best friend. That's the Corey Richens these 26 charges expose. Not someone who made one terrible choice under unbearable pressure. Someone who spent years treating the people closest to her. Her husband, her business, 25 lenders, insurance companies, and the one person close enough to call family. Like they existed to serve her. And when they stopped being useful, she was done with them. Eric Richens' 3 sons are being raised by Katie Richens Benson and her husband, Clint. Eric's boys, the children, he went to a lawyer to protect when he realized that Corey did not have their best interest at heart. The trust he built wasn't about his money. It was making sure that no matter what happened, his sons would be cared for by someone who actually loved them more than she loved what they were worth. That's what Eric built in the time he had left. And Corey couldn't even let a best friend keep a house. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I know there's still like some Corey supporters. There's some that I know are friends of hers that watch the program and they always comment. All I can do is look at the track record. Take the murder out of it. Just look at this. Why would anyone want to be friends with someone like that? Unless you yourself are a lot like that and see yourself in Corey. Love for you to weigh in. Give us your thoughts. Substack, YouTube, the links are in the description. And if you've not done so already, you can take us with you. If you're watching us on YouTube going, I wish I could listen to this in the car, at work, on the beach, wherever you might be. Today's best variety of continuous hit crimes is here for you. All you have to do is check out our podcast, the audio version of it, Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski, wherever you get podcasts. And conveniently, if you're watching us on YouTube right now, there's a QR code right there. Scan that. It'll take you to whatever podcast player you like, and you hit subscribe. And then take us with you there. So you don't miss any of our coverage of this. We're going to be following it all the way through the financial crimes trial. Gee, I can't wait. Can you? All right. Until next time, I'm Tony Brewski. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.